Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, November 14th. I'm Ray Graff, and you thought we'd get through the whole autumn without a program about model trains. Wrong. It's all aboard for today's program. We have two experts in the studio to talk about trains and model train collecting. Jeff Stege, John Basile are here. They have decades of experience buying and selling trains. The Albany Train Show is happening Saturday, November 23rd at the Polish Community Center in Albany. So we'll rev it up for that event and welcome these guys back once again. The number here is 800-348-2551. They're well-versed in the history of real-life railroads as well. 800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Choo-choo-cha-boogie. Here we go, trains after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Hey, the Albany Train Show is happening Saturday, November 23rd at the Polish Community Center in Albany. So today we talk about trains, both model trains and the real thing. Jeff Stege is an avid collector of Lionel and other O-gauge trains, particularly American and German trains from the early 20th century. He's also well-versed in local railroad history, particularly the New York Central Line. John Basile has more than 50 years collecting experience. He specializes in standard and wide-gauge trains from the early 20th century. He's also well-versed in early short-line railroads in the Capital District and the Adirondacks. The number to call with your train questions, both real and model, 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jeff Stege and John Basile, welcome back. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing great. Great to be here, Ray.
Love to have you guys here. Now, the show is coming up on November 23rd at the Polish Community Center. Are you guys ready to go?
We are right on track, as it turns out.
Right on track.
And unless we get derailed, we should be fine.
Have you been writing your own material now? Or?
Full steam ahead.
Okay, that's enough. So just for those who have never been to this event, it's a fairly big deal. There are a lot of vendors and interesting information and
cool
stuff.
Yes, and so you have a number of tables. We have about 100 vendor tables of trains and train-related items, both real trains, as you mentioned, and also model trains.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of working layouts, and for our young engineers out there, we're actually going to have a face painter and somebody who makes balloon animals at the show this year.
Oh, wow.
It'll be a circus.
So
it'll be a circus.
When they make the balloon animals, could they make balloon trains?
We're going to make that request. Yes,
that would be really cool. By the way, I got an email from Harry from the Catskill Mountain Railroad Company who reminds us that the Polar Express begins in Kingston November 15th.
Polar Express begins in Kingston.
The Catskill Mountain Railroad. So I've never been on that. I actually saw it. We were, I was down with the family a couple summers ago, and we were down that way, and I saw where it leaves. It looks like a pretty cool thing. How long does the Catskill Mountain Railroad go? I mean, how many miles?
It's really an excursion. It's a scenic railroad. So
it
only goes, I think, about 7-8 miles.
Yeah.
But that's not important when you have hot chocolate and, everybody's singing Christmas carols. So
just to be on that topic for a moment, that particular line was part of what way back when?
Those guys were part of Delaware and Hudson, weren't they, at one point?
Could be. I'm not sure. Some of the mountains railroads were all separate, and I'm more familiar with what happened in the Adirondacks. And they all had reasons like lumber business, or moving people, or moving coal and things like that out of the mountains.
And then where would the hub be? So I've read about these. Not exactly industrial train tracks, but tracks that are meant to ferry wood or coal or whatever they're mining down from the mountains. Where do they go? Did they go to Schenectady or Voorheesville and disembark there and get onto bigger trains?
Well, I think that's what happened, but it was those kind of places, those kind of facilities were all over. I mean, all throughout the state of New York, New Jersey. A lot of it went down to the New York City area.
Mm.
So a number of the railroads came out of upstate New York and ferried their wood and coal and whatever else was made, milk, to New York.
Milk was a big deal. It was actually the Delaware and Hudson Canal that changed New York City. In other words, without the coal that they could bring from eastern Pennsylvania, they brought that over the canal, and that's what enabled New York City to grow into the city that it was. Up until that time, New York City was not the most populous city in the United States. And, of course, this goes back to the 1800s. So it was coal that changed all that, and it was the Delaware and Hudson Canal, which is – you can't even see anymore. I mean,
really?
There's some remnants of it when you go down into Rosendale. There's actually five
there's former suspended bridge. And one of which still exists.
Locks, suspended locks. That's what they are. Five suspended locks, one right after the other.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking the locks themselves. There are locks, and then there was a bridge, a suspension bridge, that carried the canal boats over the Delaware River, because the coal came out of the Carbondale coal fields in Pennsylvania, and it was hard coal.
Right.
To me, it was interesting because I lived in the Westchester Putnam County area for a quarter century, and the old photographs of the 1800s, mid-1800s, when they first were taking photographs, you'd look out and there weren't any trees. No trees. Huh. All the trees were used up for either building houses or
fuel.
Heating houses. And cooking.
This is northern Westchester and Putnam?
Yes.
Amazing.
And you go there today, it's all trees.
Yeah, it sure is. There must be a lot of iron in the ground in southern Putnam and in northern Westchester. There are a ton of old mines that are closed now, right?
Yep.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, especially if over in Harriman, which is on the western side of the Hudson River, Harriman State Park, there was a number of iron mines over in there. And, you know, back in the day, you know, you asked specifically about the Ulster, the Catskill Railroad. I think that was a commuter railroad. And,
You
know, people forget that there was a time before automobiles and buses when the only way to get around was either by stagecoach or if you had some sort of vehicular way to do that. And the train was really the only vehicular transportation that was available. So...
Have the gauges, I'm not talking about model trains, but the width of the tracks changed since those days?
Interesting you should mention that, Ray. It turns out, and this is a true thing, the width of the rails is defined by Rome, ancient Rome.
What?
Yeah, because when they build wagons back in ancient Rome, they had to be the width of two horses. And so the wheels were basically that width, and that created a rut. And then going forward, when they were building the rails, they built them literally based on that same
thought process. I never knew that.
That they were going to be as wide as two horses' asses. Yes.
Jeff, did you just make that up, or is that real?
I did not. That is a true thing.
But the dimension... The dimensions is 4 foot, 8.5 inches. But you brought up the question about commuting. And I brought a couple of examples.
I see that you brought some toys. What do we got there?
Well, the first one I have is, both of these were trolleys. They were made by the Ives Company in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Amazing.
And this was made, the first one, is a trolley you've got a conductor on each end of it's cast iron trolley.
Oh, look at that, yeah.
And it's clockwork. It's made to run on the floor. It's from the late 1890s and turn of the century.
So that's an imitation of an electric trolley, right?
The top is supposed to be
the electric.
And if back that period of time, the trolleys were a major way to get around, and then they went from city to city and they became interurbans. And so this is about a 1909 clockwork trolley.
Amazing.
But this is made for O-gauge track.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
And it's made by the same company, Ives, And it's a lithographed a little trolley. What I like about it is I live in Stillwater.
Okay.
And I live in an old church. It's right on the Hudson River. And in front of that ran, in 1890, there was a company called the Mechanicville Stillwater Railroad. And what it was a horse-drawn railroad.
You're kidding
it was
me.
In the street, and they had little trolley cars. Well, they didn't run on electricity. They were pulled by horses. Well, that lasted just about 5 years, and the hydroelectric dam was put into service right there in Stillwater, and it then they converted it to the Mechanicville Stillwater electric trolley system.
Was that common, having horse-drawn trains?
Yes.
I mean, it must have been brutal on the horses.
Well, there was horse poop everywhere because horses pulled all the wagons and everything anyway.
But I'm saying is, I mean, it's a lot of work for a couple of horses to pull a trolley, yeah?
Well, no. I have one picture that shows a single horse pulling a small four-wheel trolley car.
Huh.
And so that's what, and that then it got electrified.
Yeah.
So when the electricity came along, they got they electrified the tracks.
Hold that thought for a minute. I want to talk about trolleys because, you know, if you go in the right spot in Albany, you'll still see the tracks. They're still
correct.
There under the roads. Jeff Stedge is here and John Basile. The Albany train show happens at the Polish Community Center Saturday, November 23rd. The number to call here if you have a question about old-time railroads or model trains, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Johnny Griffin, Mildew, that's the bumper music. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's trains today, model trains, real railroads of yesteryear. John Basile and Jeff Stedge are with us. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab a call, then we'll go back to our trolley conversation. Larry's in Stockport. Larry, go ahead.
Hi. I know it's difficult because so many old train aficionados who repaired HO trains are retired, no longer doing it. But I've got a number of Gilbert HO trains that I grew up with that I'd love to get repaired and pass on. And I was wondering if there were any suggestions.
These guys would know. I mean, are there still people who do these sorts of things?
Yes, there are. I happen to know a guy very well that will work on that stuff. And, you know, it's interesting when you see these things, you think, I can't get it fixed. It's never going to run again. But there's not a lot of, you know, pardon the expression, but there's not a lot of moving parts there.
Mm.
You know, on a little electrical engine like that, there's only so many things that can go wrong. So, yes, the answer to your question is, Larry, it can be done. Yes, it can.
But is it cost prohibitive?
Well, you bring up a really good point.
Don't
right?
do prices, but just in general.
Yeah, no. But the idea is that a lot of people, and I think Larry falls into this category, you know, if you have sentimental attachment to that, you'd really like to see it run again.
Yeah.
And you don't want to say cost is no object, but you can get it done for a reasonable amount of money, and you can bring it back to life, yeah.
So are there guys at the Albany Train Show that will?
There are guys at the Albany Train Show that have that skill set, yes.
So that might be worth the trip. I don't know, Larry, but thank you very much. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jeff Stedge is here. John Basile is here. It's trains today. So getting back to what I said before the break, there are certain areas, I think over by West Lawrence and a few spots here and there in Albany where you can see these train lines. And it makes me sad to some extent because it made such perfect sense in so many ways. The cars just put them out of business? Is that what happened?
That is correct. That's what happened.
Buses.
The automobile became so relatively inexpensive and gave people so much more freedom, a movement, that they put the trolleys out of business.
And in a really short period of time, too.
Yeah.
If you look back, like John was talking about the Stillwater and Mechanicville Railroad, and every little town basically had some sort of commuter trolley, what they called an interurban. Because, again, without any vehicular way of getting around, this was the thing that people did. But they were so prolific throughout the United States in every town, all of these little short lines, and they were used for commuting. That's the way you got to work. That's the way you went to the market, was you used a little trolley.
Yeah.
And by the 1920s, that was all had started to change because of buses and because of the advent of the automobile.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the Mechanicville-Stillwater Railroad didn't last long, maybe less than 10 years, because by 1900, it had become part of an interurban system called the Hudson Valley Railroad.
Huh.
Now, the Hudson Valley Railroad ran from Waterford all the way up to Warrensburg, New York. And to me, it ran right in front of my house. And right in Stillwater, they had a car barn. And it was interurban. Of course, that went between different villages and cities in the region. But there were a number of those in the Albany region. And in fact, one of the great things that still exists that the Hudson Valley Railroad built was the station that anybody that drives into Saratoga Springs drives right by it. It's a gorgeous building that's been kept.
I'm going to have to look for that.
And it's to me, it's just fascinating.
Now, when was that, John?
It's right across from, I'm trying to remember.
When was that they, that it changed to the Hudson River Railroad?
The Hudson Valley Railroad was formed in basically 1899 and 1900.
You waved to them, didn't you, when they drove by the house?
Yeah, sure. And then it went bust in 1928.
Did it?
So it didn't last long.
Huh.
But it became uneconomic, and they tore the tracks up. And
what happened to all the old roundhouses?
They didn't use roundhouses. Steam engines used the roundhouses, because right in Mechanicville, there was two roundhouses, I think. One of which was still there when my youngest daughter and her family moved to Mechanicville. It was that was the D&H roundhouse, and it was a five-stall roundhouse. But they tore it. It's been torn down since, of course.
Now, for all of our friends west of the Capital District, out in Oneonta.
Oh, boy.
That was the largest roundhouse in the world for a short period of time. And I don't know how many stalls it was, but, you think of Oneonta, really not as a huge metropolis, but this was a major hub. And, again, it was I think it was either 28 or 32 stalls. It was a huge, huge warehouse.
We have to go to the phones in a minute, but explain to me very quickly. And the number here is 800-348-2551. Eileen and Latham will be right there, and I'll get to you next. Explain to me how the roundhouses worked exactly. Because, I mean, these trains, these engines, they're heavy. How do you turn them?
Well, there's what's known as a turntable.
Yeah, okay.
That's a perfect word.
But they're still heavy. How do you make the turntable
turn?
Well,
the turntable's balanced. And the locomotive, it's a track, and it has rails. It's got a pivot in the center, and it's got a track, circular track, that goes all the way around. And the ends of the turntable have train wheels on them that ride that track. And there's still examples that are operational. There is one down in Danbury, Connecticut, at the Railroad Museum in Danbury, that is still serviceable, and there's a couple up in Massachusetts. So those things, the train drove onto it, and it was balanced in effect, and smaller ones were actually pushed by a couple men.
Yeah.
Bigger ones, like the New York Central would have been electrified and have motors that drove them around. And then what they did is they stopped at a track that led directly into the roundhouse. And so being a turntable, that's why it's called a roundhouse, is because it has to be around the turntable.
So interesting. All right, listen, let's go back to the phones. Jeff Stege and John Basile are here. The Albany Train Show happens Saturday, November 23rd at the Polish Community Center in Albany. Let's go to Eileen in Latham. Eileen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, have you ever heard of the PP&J Railroad? It was in Saratoga County, I believe. It was called Push, Pull, and Jerk. And it was, I think, two brothers, who I think are relatives of mine, would push, like, they had to do the pump thing to make it go. So I don't really know where it was. I don't know when it was. And I just wondered if you'd ever heard of it.
Interesting.
So this is the PP&J. Now, this is not pomegranate peanut butter and jelly, correct?
No, I don't think so.
That's okay. Good. Don't humor him, Eileen.
Do you? So now this was something that was run by relatives of yours?
Well, that's what my mother told me. And
when did she tell you this?
I did see something at some point. Oh, well, a while ago.
Okay.
But,
I mean, it is very possible. There were a ton of very small, what they called short line railroads. The world's shortest short line railroad is actually less than a half a mile long. And so, especially in the Adirondacks, when you had a lot of industries that relied on the railroads, mining and logging, and I'm not sure what the push-pull-and-jerk railroad, I can only imagine what the push-pull-and-jerk railroad is.
I thought that was you, Doug, and John, when that's what I call you, push-pull-and-jerk.
Yeah, so I can only imagine what the industry that they were involved in.
But it does ring a bell with me, and I think there's a book that covers some oddball things that are in Saratoga County around Saratoga Springs, and it's been a long time since I read it. I don't remember.
Huh?
We will do some research.
You've stumped the band, Eileen. This is great. I love this. Well, thanks a lot for the call. We'll see if we can. These guys will be back in the spring, and maybe they'll do a little homework for you next time.
We'll do a little research on that push, pull, and jerk.
All right.
We might try it out ourselves.
All right. Let's go to Tom in Saratoga. Tom, you're on.
Yeah. I have a couple of recollections. One was there was a trolley that ran, I believe, from Gloversville up to Caroga Lake, and it's quite a steep climb. And I remember that on the way down, rather than using friction brakes, they had a big air motor, kind of like the control inside of a music box, but only much larger.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm trying to remember if that in fact was true or if it was just made up in my mind. And the other one was that there was some sort of a water gravity train system that went along the Erie Canal or the Mohawk River. So the water cars would pull the train up, and then it would coast down to the next site.
Wow.
If anybody remembers that. I had a book that had all about the 1800s and stuff in Lake George and the Mohawk Valley area. I lost it, so I loaned it to somebody, never got it back, and I never found anything else about that.
You probably loaned it to Jeff Stege, and he probably still has it. All right, what do you guys think?
Well, there were inclined railways. And there's a number of ways that they operated. In fact, we were talking a little while ago about the Delaware and Hudson Canal. But in the Pennsylvania part, they had the coal was hauled by cables up inclined railways and to the mines. And then the coal allowed the cars to coast down. Well, in their case, they used early steam engines to pull the cars up, and then when they loaded with coal, they would coast down. But there were all kinds of things that were tried, and using water power as a motive to pull the cars up would be one of the possibilities, and I'm sure there was a number of examples.
Do you think there are any remaining examples of this?
Probably not.
I mean, that's a long time ago.
There's probably remnants of it. But, Tom, you also brought up an interesting thing. Now, Caroga Lake, 125 years ago, wasn't there some sort of amusement park up there?
Yes. Okay.
So, interestingly, this brings up a point about the railroads and trolleys in particular, because a lot of the amusement parks, in fact, almost all of the original amusement parks in the United States, were funded by the railroads. And the reason was is because this was an opportunity for the railroads to get passengers on Saturdays and Sundays. They would take them out to these destinations, and voila, what were these destinations? Why, they were amusement parks where people could enjoy themselves. So the railroads were the way, the mechanism that you got out there, but the railroads were also the ones that had initially financed that. So if you think about...
The Hudson Valley Railroad was an example because they had an amusement park that they serviced on Saratoga Lake.
Well, I'll be darned.
Right. There was Cater-Ross's.
Cater-Ross was
it. Yeah. That's that. Yeah. Caroga Lake was another one. Rye Playland was another one.
I remember Rye Playland, the dragon coaster. Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and,
buddy.
What's the big one? Now, this is what happens when you get old.
All right.
What's the big one out in Brooklyn? The big.
Coney Island.
Coney Island. Yeah. Coney Island was, that was financed by the original urban transportation down there, which was not only subways, not only, well, at that time it was prior to the subways, but the traction companies that were down there, in other words, the trolley companies.
Tom, you want to do any follow-up here? We kind of got off track a little bit.
It was just that air motor thing. It was kind of just like the music box. That's kind of a cool technology to save on friction brakes as opposed just let the air slow it down, going down hills. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jeff Stedge and John Basile are here. We talk railroads and model railroads. The Albany Train Show happens Saturday, November 23rd at the Polish Community Center in Albany. Jeff, you took a breath. I assume you wanted to say something.
Well, yes. So, interestingly, John had brought up Danbury Railroad Museum. And one of the last times that we were in here, we were talking about one of the iconic engines of the early New York Central, which I don't know how much we had told you about this, but there was an early engine that was electrified. And the reason that they did that was because the steam engines used to go into the tunnels in New York City. Big fire. And what was that, 1905?
It's earlier. 1903 killed like 28 people.
Yikes.
So there was a huge demand, a huge outcry that they come up with some alternative. And what they did was they came up with an electrified engine. Well, the very prototype of that electrified engine for many, many, many years sat in Glenmont, New York.
That's right. Secret location, and you wouldn't tell me it was near the river,
we wouldn't tell you,
yes.
Ray. There were reasons for that.
Okay.
We didn't want you to go and vandalize it.
You know.
What has happened since then is actually very exciting because this has been in the process for many, many years. This derelict engine, this S1, which is really an icon in the world of railroading, has now been moved down to the Danbury Museum.
No way.
Yeah, they picked it up with a crane, broke it, and then they put it on a...
They broke it?
Yeah, they put it on a truck. Well, they got to fix it.
Okay.
They put it on a truck, and they've moved it down to the Danbury Museum.
No way.
And they are in the process of restoring it, which is really a modern miracle because this story is... literally 20 years in the making since the time that Danbury Museum had actually acquired the rights to it and the ability for them to move it from where it was in Glenmont down to the museum.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So where is I used to live right across the state line from Danbury briefly a couple years. And so I know the city. But I don't know where this train museum is.
It's right downtown.
Yeah.
It's right in the center of the city. And it's, and of course, the station's still used by Metro North. So you can commute into New York City right with Metro North right from that same station. But the museum is there because there was a rail yard there There was a roundhouse, and it's gone. But there's a turntable that you can ride on when they have events there. There's all kinds of trains
that's amazing
there. But to me, this story about this S1 locomotive that Jeff's mentioned here is, you know, it's a Schenectady story, because who designed it? In 1904, General Electric and Alco, American Locomotive Works, they are the ones that put it together.
Wow.
And it was tested in Scotia. They built a special track of 5 miles in length to test this first engine that's going to be electrified to run from Croton Harmon, New York, into Manhattan in Grand Central Station.
Amazing.
And that's the first one that they used that was tested on that track. And it exists today.
That
to me is really exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. All right, let's grab one. Now, let's take a break, Zach, and then we'll hit the phones, and then we'll hit the emails. 800-348-2551. John Basile, Jeff Stedger here. It's Trains, Trains, Trains. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. You're over there. The guys across the table from me, Jeff Stedge and John Basile, they are train experts. The Albany Train Show happens Saturday, November 23rd at the Polish Community Center in Albany, right over there on the Washington Ave extension, if I'm correct. 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones in a moment. A couple quick emails. One of them, the subject heading is push, pull, and jerk. I'm not going to click on that. That might not be safe for work. So we'll get
to that. It's the oldest profession, right? Come on.
You know what? Let's see. We have this one from Gary. I have an MTH DCS train set. I know that MTH was discontinued, but casting for new cars is still being performed. What will be the future of getting track and DCS electronics for these?
Interesting that you should mention that, Gary. Interesting. So as it turns out, we have a connection that is, and this brings up a little bit of a side subject, which, if it's okay, we'll go into for a couple seconds. So when they make trains, when they make model trains, one of the questions for a lot of people is, well, what happens if my train breaks and I need to get parts for it?
Yeah.
Where do parts come from, Ray? It's sort of like, where do babies come from?
Look, Stedge.
So what happens is when they decide that they're going to make a particular model, they allocate a certain amount of metal resources for that. And, of course, there's a die, and it goes through the die, and they manufacture that. And if there's going to be a run of, say, 200 for that particular model, all of a sudden there's excess metal left over. And that is where parts come from.
Huh.
What ends up happening is any additional or excess metal that has been allocated for that, that goes into the die, and so now you have some excess castings. The same holds true for every other component in that engine. Now, the very interesting part about that process is that that's great that they made this, but what do they do with it after they make all of these parts? Well, in the case of MTH, what they did was they put them all in a lot of Tupperware bins, and they put a label on the outside of it, and they stuck it in a warehouse somewhere that nobody knew where it was.
Oh, boy.
And so when you called down to MTH and you said, I would like to get parts for my MTH engine, they'd say, yeah, no, we're out of stock on that. That's unavailable. Well, I actually have a buddy of mine who is in the process of working with another guy that used to work directly with Lionel. They are going through and inventorying all these parts.
Oh,
nice. And Gary, I'm here to tell you that whatever you need is probably available.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. Let's go to one more email here. This is from Artie in Ballston Lake. I have a small press that was used for assembly of Lionel trains. It still has the assembly fixture and part of a train. It has a tag that says Lionel Factory. Would this be of interest to anyone in the train community?
So, interesting thing that you have there, Artie. That's what's known as an arbor press. and Lionel had thousands of them. If you look at that, there's probably a four-digit or a three-digit number for the item that it pertained to. Mm. So when Lionel Manufacturing, they literally had umpteen presses set up for one particular thing. So if you had, we're going to say a steam engine, and we're going to call that steam engine a 2065, there was a press that would press on certain rivets, and then you'd move it to the next one, and that would press on the drawbar. And so every one of those presses had a very specific use. Now, the question becomes, is it of value? I bought, because I thought the same thing as you, Artie, I probably bought 15 of them from a guy. And much like owning a boat, the happiest day of my life was when I bought it, and the happiest day of my life was when I sold it. There was virtually no value to those. I mean, if you can get $20 for them, then
okay,
that's
all right,
about
fair
it.
Enough. All right, we have a lot of calls here.
As you would expect, Ray.
Exactly. Well, you know what? It takes sometimes a little while, and we have so many. We'll try to go through them as quickly as we can.
Okay.
Before we do that, though, quickly, I'm looking at this ancient 1909 trolley here, John Basile, and it's got, it looks like a cow catcher, but it's no cow catcher I've ever seen before.
It's really called a people catcher.
Oh, cut it out.
Well, people walked across the streets in front of trolleys, and once in a while, they got run over.
Ouch.
So the solution was to have a sloped grill thing that if they got hit,
right,
they'd fall on the grill thing and wouldn't kill them.
Right, you'd impale them. That's nice. It was an upgrade. That's great. Good for you. All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Sammy in Johnstown. Sammy, you're on. Hello, Sammy.
Yeah, hey, guys. Just to inform you, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. The Duquesne Incline in Pittsburgh is a vibrant 150-year incline railway that takes you from the Three Rivers at the bottom to the top of the observation deck.
I've heard of that
one. In Pittsburgh.
You are correct, sir. You know what? It's interesting you bring that. Isn't there a great restaurant at the top of that? There's some great.
Yes, there is.
What's the name of that?
Arby's?
Yes,
Arby's. I don't know, but there's more than one.
Yeah?
There's more than one incline running in Pittsburgh, and
yes,
I don't think it's the only city that has them.
That is so cool, Sammy. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Romine over in Keysville, up there in Keysville. How you doing?
Hi there. I wanted to mention the Keysville-Los Sable Chasm and Lake Champlain Railroad, which ran up here connecting the industry in Keysville through Los Sable Chasm down to Port Kent, New York, ran from 1889 to 1924 and was actually electrified for a few years in between there.
Hmm.
I didn't know if your experts had ever heard of that.
John actually used to wave to those people, too.
That's mean.
And the other thing I wanted to give a shout out to, if anybody's ever been over to Rochester, the Edgerton Model Railroad Club over there has an operating Lionel Railroad model that is themed among the four seasons, and it's split into four quarters, one for each season.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's worth seeing if you get out there.
How big is that? I mean, how big is the layout?
The layout is it's not something like it's not massive,
right,
but it's run by volunteers. The building was actually, and the layout, I think, I can't remember the history on this. I think it was donated by somebody. You can read up on it. It's
okay.
Edgerton Model Railroad Club, and it's in great shape. It's fun to watch the trains run. They have open houses once a month, and if you're ever over that way, it's worth seeing.
You guys know this one?
I've heard of it. I've never been there.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. Great hearing from up there in Keysville, New York. Let's go to Rexford. Mike, you're on with Jeff Stedge and John Pazil.
Yes, hello. Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I've got a question for you about, this is about real trains. I live about like a mile or so as the crow flies from the grade crossing in Alplaz, New York, just a little, slightly north of Schenectady.
Mm-hmm.
And I can clearly hear the trains come and go. And a while ago, I got a hold of the schedules, and And I've identified the trains that pass through there, the Amtrak trains, the Adirondack and the Ethan Allen. And I can hear them distinctly. And I really enjoy listening for them and knowing which one it is. You know, when I hear a
train,
I know.
Don't go out on the track when you hear the train coming.
Don't go out on the track.
No, I'm a mile away. That's not an issue. Okay. I don't see the trains. I just hear them. My hearing's pretty good, and I can tell the difference between types of trains. So I'm enjoying listening, you know, and anticipating listening for the Amtrak trains coming through. But they also get a lot of freight trains through there, and I can hear the difference. There's less whistling and more rumbling for a freight train. Mm. My question is, do freight trains like run on a schedule? Is there a way for me to get a schedule and find out what freight trains they are, or do they just kind of come and go whenever the company seems fit?
That's a great question. I've never heard that one.
For obvious reasons, the passenger trains are going to have schedules.
Right.
The freight trains.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Right. And so the freight trains, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I'm going to say that's much more ad hoc because, you know, really what ends up happening with a freight train is they have to build a big enough consist for it to make economic sense for them to move from one location to another. With a passenger train, you know, obviously if you are using that as a commuter vehicle or if you're using it to get from point A to point B, you have to have some reliability on a schedule. You have to be able to know, I can get on that train at such and such a
right.
time and get off
of
it. But I think with the freight trains,
of course.
It's more ad hoc.
So whenever they need to move a shipment.
That's kind of what I thought. I haven't been able, the reason I called to ask you is I haven't really been able to pick out a pattern for when I hear them.
Right. And I was just going to say,
I can't find a pattern.
Right. And I was just going to say that probably because your ears are so well tuned to the different kinds of trains, you're probably going to be able to recognize, hey, I know that's coming through because that's the 503, you know, Ethan Allen. Whereas with the freight trains, you know, it's like, oh, that's interesting that it's coming through at 4 o'clock. It came through at 3:15 yesterday.
Huh.
So
yeah, that's the place I'm at now. Yeah. And I enjoy saying, oh, that's the Ethan Allen. Yeah, I know what time that is. Yeah,
there you go.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right, Mike.
I would rest easy knowing that you probably conquered this problem.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. We'll now go over to Nassau. It's Kurt. You go ahead.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Well, we're all right. How are you?
We can't forget the east side of the river here. The world wasn't invented in Saratoga.
You got it, man.
We had something called the... a little dig. The Albany Southern Railroad had many names. That was the name it was under for most years. Went from downtown Albany, the original plaza, the D&H building, across the river, and all the way through the countryside to Hudson. And I think the guys who promoted the railroads or the trolley lines were really the first great copywriters because they could come up with a marvelous language. This is the largest one in the world, the first modal inner-city transportation network in the world. They started about 1888, 1889, and their final day of operation was December 29th, 1929. And the big reason was the Depression is what it was considered here. But it did tremendous things for the tourism, the business nature. It was a big deal, in certainly where I live in Nassau, so much so that there are still a few remnants. One is, and they got their power from the Stuyvesant Falls waterfall, and it started in Hudson, came up north. They sold the electrical power to all the municipalities if they wanted street lights. They wanted a siren for their fire department. And, of course, the famous entertainment near us was Kinderhook Lake Electric City. That was a big thing. You could take your family there on the weekends and you didn't have to worry about body language and all of that. Problems with people stepping on the third rail, though. That was something. No, that would not be good. I guess the dogs didn't fare too well either. I've done a lot of conversations with old folks. Many now gone, and they really revered the trainman, the operator, the guy who took the tickets. It was almost like they were famous.
Yeah.
And you sure don't know that today when if and when you take a CDTA bus.
Right.
But it was a great thing for this area, and I just wanted to put a plug in for beautiful Nassau.
Hey, Kurt, thank you very much for the call. You know, it struck me, and we'll go right back to the phones. Matthew in Hoosick Falls, you're next. Do they have, is there a book, you guys are experts on this stuff, where they sort of have a map of all the lines that used to go? And I'm sure there's some that people have forgotten completely about, but is there a book that has maps of that?
There are, but they're written by people who are really interested in such things. There is a series of books, for example, in the Adirondacks. I think there's three different books that were done by this, and I can't remember his name, by the same person.
John
Hamm?
It
covers all the railroads up in the Adirondacks. And I've always been fascinated with the Adirondacks, and there are so many of them, I don't even know what they are, of course. But I got these books, and I can look it up. But that's true. There was a book done on the Hudson Valley Railroad that I have.
There actually is and I think I have it. I don't know. I got to dig
like
it out.
Like an atlas?
It's almost like a New York State atlas of railroad lines. Yes.
That's so cool. All right, let's go to Hoosick Falls. And Matthew, you're on.
Hey, I just want to know if you could touch on the Cog Railroad on Mount Washington. Kind of like the only one of its kind, I believe. And I'll listen on the air.
Thanks a lot, Matthew. Well, John, you are nodding your head and smiling, so you must know something.
I love the Mount Washington Cog Railway, but the steam trains aren't, I guess they're only used a couple times a week now.
Mm-hmm. But steam trains, still in operation.
Oh, these things. Well, that the original Cog Railway was that. That was there in 1860-something or other.
Yeah.
And they had the shops to repair and even build these things right there. But the interesting part is as you go up the Cog Railway, there's one's coming down, one's going up. Now you got to pass each other, and you've got a single rail line. And so they've got a switched siding, and the guys have to get out of the guy that operates it has to set the brakes, get out, and he has to make 14 separate moves to get the switch and the cog properly placed in the switch so he can move one of the trains up into that, and so the other one can go down. So then they got to reset the down direction.
I mean, I was thinking about this prior to this show. In the old days, well, maybe there were no old days before telegraph, but how did, if you had a single line, did you know if you're blasting along in your steam train that there's not another one coming in the opposite direction?
Oh, that was always a problem. They were called cornfield meets, and they had all kinds of names for them. But if you look, there's all kinds of books that are written on accidents with photographs of accidents of trains running into each other.
Yikes. All right, one more call here, and then we'll wrap it up. We'll talk a little about the train show. Peter and Niskayuna, you'll be last here today. Go ahead.
According to an article in the New Yorker, which appeared years and years ago, the car companies, basically General Motors and oil companies, systematically bought up every trolley car system in the country and shut them down so that they could sell cars and gas.
Huh. Well, John was shaking his head. John Basile.
Well, I think that's a possibility, but the convenience of the automobile really, I got rid of all the interurban companies.
Yeah.
And for the most part.
Oh, one more thing.
But it could be.
We all miss Walt and his Mohawk Valley Railroad.
Oh. Yep.
Yes, we do.
All right. They're nodding their heads. Peter, thanks a lot. We'll have to leave it there. By the way, we got an email from Penny, the Danbury Train Museum, 120 White Street in Danbury. 120
there
White
you
Street.
Go.
All right, fellas, the big show is coming up in a couple of Saturdays from now, Saturday 23rd, and that's at the Polish Community Center. Jeff Stedge, give us a 15-minute précis of what we'll see.
15 minutes? Excellent.
No,
right?
15 seconds. All right, your time is up. Sorry, thank you.
Well, come on down. You will see there'll be 100 vendor tables. There'll be dancing chickens.
Dancing chickens?
Yes, we'll have dancing chickens.
Right.
There will be singing cows.
We will actually have face painters and somebody making balloon animals. But if you're new to the hobby or if you're an expert, there'll be people down there to talk to about how to build your layout, how to make changes to your layout. If you have any, if you have treasures in your attic, bring them down. Free appraisals.
All right,
free
you appraisals. Guys will be there?
We'll be there.
All right, so if you see Jeff Stedge and John Basile, say hello. Meantime, we'll see you guys in March, right?
We'll see you in March.
I've already booked you, so you better not.
God bless you, Ray.
You didn't screw up today, so that's good. I feel better about next year. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design services with cabinetry from Wellborn at Marilotte. Virtual designer consultations available, curtislumber.com. Thanks again to Jeff Stedge and John Basile for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who engineered today over there in Master Control. See that? Engineered like a train. He's nodding. Woo, woo. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, just in time for the holiday season, Ellen Gray will join us to talk about pies. We'll see you at 2 p.m. for that one.